You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
We're working with CDC, the World Health Organization, and we have four infectious disease specialists from universities around the country, including Columbia, Duke, MIT, that are giving us advice on what they think the course of the pandemic is going to be and what the outlook is for returning to a more normal situation.
Rob Bamford sounds resilient right now. He sounds like he not only wants to get baseball back so the business can get started up, so the players can be satiated, but so that the country can find something to look forward to.
I mean, it's a blessing, number one. I think you've been given a platform that you got to find ways to be able to give to others, and I think that's the best way to be able to do it. And obviously during times like this, you got to find ways to immediately impact as many people as possible, and I think it's the best way to do it thus far.
I want to tell people, please practice social distancing. Stay at home, because that's the only way that we're going to defeat this virus.
And now, stunned to see the Royals already down 3-0, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB here on opening day, or at least what was supposed to be opening day for the Major League Baseball season. Day 16, the program versus COVID-19. Busy day for you as we come to you from three separate locations. Myself, Curtis Siebel, Jed Marshall with you here in the program, and a busy program to say the least. RJ Anderson is going to be with us on what would have been opening day. We turn to CBS's Major League Baseball writer. We'll talk some baseball. He has simulated opening day. The best part about it, Royals White Sox simulation, rain out. That is the greatest thing
so
ever.
Awesome.
Like that's a true simulation, because don't like 20% of opening days get rain or snowed out every year anyway. So I like how the Royals they got rained out. He's also simulated the season at like 40 games and different amounts of games, which we've gone back historically. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit later on in the program and take a look at what some of the shorter seasons, how it would have altered what the playoffs truly ended up being. We'll talk about that. Curtis Siebold has grinded through the numbers to give us some details on that. May not get to it today. We'll get to it here in the future. One of our ongoing projects. You know, we have many projects here in the program. Many projects. Many projects working very hard.
Yes, many projects we
are. Coming your way. Days to come. You'll be so thrilled with projects. You'll be sick of projects. We've got so many projects.
Very many.
It's the first time I've ever actually even tried that impression. Am I even in the ballpark?
In the ballpark.
Not what
being
you're
that bad. I've never done a decent impression really in my life. Saying no would probably be taking the field, because this would be the first one I did well. If you hesitate at all on that decision, Jed, how'd I do?
In the ballpark.
I said not one of your best.
Yeah, okay. All right, I don't have a best, so it's right
well,
there.
Add that to the list, then.
Bruce Weber. Bruce Weber's pretty good.
My Bruce Weber is pretty good because I share the same voice challenges that Bruce Weber does. So I can get there with the hoarse voice. I can do that pretty easy. So I can get you some Bruce Weber, the President of the United States. Not so much. Not so much. I'll do that. You got it, Bruce. Fran, what do you think?
Accurate.
We got a lot on our list. You know, I'm not going to lie to you folks, okay? Number one, we hope you are all practicing social distancing. Have you noticed all the college football coaches that are now putting out videos?
Mm-hmm.
Who was I hearing in the open there? Who was that in the open?
That was Commissioner Rob Manfred, Jeff Passan, our good friend, Russell Westbrook, talking about how this is a great time to support your community and different foundations doing good work. And then, of course, Magic Johnson promoting the fact that everyone needs to social distance and take this time seriously.
Okay. Well, all the college football coaches are doing it. I thought it was great. Like, Nick Saban did it, and then immediately Dabo Sweeney did it. And then, like, everyone's like, oh, wait a minute, this is the thing? Okay, hang on. Let me get this message out to the. You're not going to be all over social media without me. Let me get my. But which it's all for a good cause. I'm not hating.
Yep.
American, good old fashioned American competition. Getting a lot of, I think, influential people to go out there and you know, I think if Dabo Swinney says social distance, there's probably a Clemson fan that went, ah, damn, Dabo's on board. All right, I'm going home. Yeah, I guarantee you, it helps. Oh man, Coach Saban's or. Oh, golly, you say there Coach Saban's on board? I guess he's not Cajun, is he? Yeah, he's not coaching LSU. Again, less impressive.
Well, I guess I can do it. If he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, well, Coach Saban says so, then I best be going home. You know, listen.
I wasn't going to do otherwise, but you know, Coach says it. That's all right.
Or even the inverse. If you're a Michigan fan like me and Ohio State's coach, Ryan Day, comes out and is like, oh, you have to stay home. I'm like, I'll stay home twice as hard as you. Show those damn Buckeyes.
I thought you were going to say, I'm going to go outside then just because you said to stay home.
Yeah, that's where I thought you were going too. It was like, screw it, man. I'm going out and I'm throwing a party in a park.
No.
I hug and kiss every person I see.
No. Stay home twice as hard.
By the way, did you see the thing that if you are out trying to actively spread the coronavirus, you will be treated as a terrorist?
I did not see that.
I saw a headline. There's so many headlines now. Listen,
yeah.
Print journalism is not at a loss for things to write. There is no shortage of stories being sent to me via email and alerts. So I can tell you there's plenty to read. If you're looking for something to do, try reading because there is no shortage of the written word in America today. I will tell you that much right now. Anyway, so we do hope that you are all practicing social distancing. You are staying home unless you are truly an essential business. Not that you just got by, because near as I can tell, and based upon our poll where the actual only essential business edict was put out, the difference in our scientific poll performed on Twitter was that only 10.5% of the population has increased at staying home from a week ago. That was disappointing for me. I wanted to see us go from 49.5% to 75%, because to me, I can't imagine that more than 25% of us are actually truly essential, right? We have been deemed essential. All media to get the messages to you have been deemed essential because they know that you consume sports, right? If you're listening to sports and there's an important message, you'll get it from us. We will get it and we will give it to you. So they have deemed the media essential. But I know us, I know 41, sending everybody home that they could possibly have to work remotely, like myself and Curtis, limiting the number of people in the building, doing everything they can. That's the direction you've got to go, right? It's as simple as that. So please adhere to that. We got RJ Anderson coming up, like I said, to talk baseball. Stump the Chumps coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Todd Lebo to join us during that time. Lebo said he's even got some questions. Exciting. Lebo returned questions. Do you have enough hair on your rear end to challenge a Todd Lebo question? We'll find out at 3, I guess. I guess we'll find out at 3. You know, when I hear you trying to talk, Curtis, I assume that then when I stop, you're going to go ahead and finish that thought.
Oh, no. I just said, I don't think you do. I don't think people out there have enough hair to challenge a Todd Lebo question.
Not a Todd Lebo question. Those are got to be special. Blair Kirkhoff coming your way in the 4 o'clock hour from the Kansas City Star. A lot of college stuff actually to discuss right now included in that. The arms race that is the get my message out to my fans to stay home and socially distance. I like it. I will wrap it all up with Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus and then, of course, Need to Know. Coming your way today in the 5 o'clock hour. So we do have a busy program coming your way. If you'd like to join into the conversation, 913-3810-810. The number, Chiefs, Royals, Sporting, Missouri, KU, K-State, always a topic here in the program. Let's start with this. Some rumblings here and there, and I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to it because I don't think the Texans are going to do anything with this. But, you know, there's been a couple of things. What it would take for Deshaun Watson to go to the Patriots. Like, apparently, you know, there's only one team that's in play for any trade, despite the fact that they don't have a lot of cap room, and that's the Pats. So I think there's a little bit of lazy journalism there, but teams can carve out cap room. It can be done at a significant penalty. But it does seem like, you know, reports that DeAndre Hopkins wanted out from Bill O'Brien, and now some people maybe either speculating, which would be unfair, or there's some truth to the fact that maybe it's not just DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe the whole team has a little problem with Bill O'Brien, and that Deshaun Watson could be that guy as well. You know, listen, what do we care? Hey, the Texans get worse. Well, the thing I do care is if, like, a really good quarterback suddenly lands on Bill Belichick's lap again, that will bother me. But it got me thinking further. You know, Darius Slay got traded away from the Lions. He's wanted out of there for more than a year. Finally got dealt to the Eagles this offseason. And he blew up Matt Patricia on his way out. We know what we saw from Scott Pioli here in Kansas City, who I think is a good man, but clearly made a lot of mistakes, and it was not a success, his era here in Kansas City. Josh McDaniels' epic failure in Denver. Thomas Dimitroff, mixed results in Atlanta, but even he is, in Patriot way, is depicted as the guy who has bucked the trend and gone against the Bill Belichick way at times. So, you know, he has built a team that could go to the Super Bowl. So that's by far the greatest success of anybody who came from the Patriot family. I think that's of note. And I think this is interesting because where are we going to be in 5 years when it comes to the Patriot way, right? We've talked a little bit this week about the legacy, right, about what, you know, who has more at stake from here moving forward, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick. And, you know, I said I think there's actually more ceiling and more floor for Belichick. I think he's the guy that's going to be either, wow, look, he's winning with this other quarterback, or, wow, look, he developed another quarterback. And Tom Brady has got, if he's not good, it's like, well, he's 43. What'd you expect? Right? There's an easy get-out-of-jail-free card there for Tom Brady. But, like, what realistically do we expect for the New England Patriots here moving forward? Because it seems like the Patriot way – and listen, and it's not to say that Matt Patricia and Bill O'Brien and Josh McDaniels recreated everything that Bill Belichick did in their new locations, but in some ways we do have one common theme. The one thing that all three of them didn't have was Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And Bill Belichick had a level of success with the Cleveland Browns, got to a playoff. Did he even win a game, Curtis?
I don't think he did. I think he lost to the Steelers and then lost again to the Patriots.
No, he only made one playoff.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, maybe he beat one and lost to the other or something like that.
Yeah.
Because he only made one playoff. I'm fairly confident about that.
So, I think he must have been 1-1 then.
Yeah, I'll look it up. But anyway, my point is this, right? Like, how do we know that the whole Patriot way isn't 70, or at least, like I say, the quarterback being 51%, that the Patriot way is at least 51%. We don't, right? But aren't we going to find out? And if everybody and their brother wants away from these coaches that leave, to me, they're all trying to be Bill Belichick. And I know from conversations I had with Scott Pioli that I distinctly got the sense that there was a feeling that, listen, you know, we're going to do this, and there's a process to this, right? How many times do we hear the process with him? There's a process, and we're going to follow that process, and then you're a winner. And I'm like, yeah, well, Belichick and Brady were two big pieces, right? Now, Belichick fills one of those roles himself every day he comes to work. But the Brady part, nobody else filled. And how much of the, okay, I will take this just absolute oppressive work, no fun, do your job, know your role, do your job. You know, what seems like the complete militaristic approach, which, keep in mind, his father spent a lot of his time, I think it was the Naval Academy. If I'm wrong, it was West Point. You know, working as an assistant there as kind of the chief film analyst. And so he grew up around a military approach to things. How much of it is like, okay, that's great when Tom Brady's there to tell some jokes when he walks out of the room, lighten the mood, and also for everyone to know, well, we got Tom. Yeah, this sucks. But when we walk out there, we got Tom, and we got a chance to win. Yeah, all this, I think this is over the top. I think it's too much. I don't think all this is really necessary. I think some of it is paralysis by analysis. But at the end of the day, he is a really good coach. He is a great coach, and we got Tom Brady, and this is my best chance to get a ring, and I really want a ring. And when Tom Brady goes away, Bill Belichick will start having problems with players all over the place. That there will not be that iconic Hall of Fame player that has his back, and the Patriots will tank. And we will find that in the modern NFL, that Bill Belichick worked great with Brady, and maybe even, you know, his highlight was his first 10 years. The second 10 years, they made some great moves. We can tell from the cap, they kind of sacrificed some of their core beliefs on how to always be good every year because they're up against the cap now. And that the Belichick way is come and gone. You know, the Belichick, the Patriot way, the Belichick way had its time, but it's now ended. And the Andy Reid, let's have some fun. Let's have Hungry Pig right. All right, let's treat the guys like men. All right, let's leave them. Let's expect them to do their thing, but let's not be oppressive in everything we do. That won't be the new way to get things done. That Belichick hasn't been able to shift gears into the grandfather stage of, yes, the kids come over here, and I don't take any crap, but I also let them have some candy, right? At grandma and grandpa's house, I know I'm going to get some candy, right? Now, grandpa's not going to take any of your lip because grandpa's old and doesn't have any patience, so he's not taking your crap, all right? But what grandpa will do is he'll give you some candy. Oh, yeah, go grab yourself a candy. Hey, you know what I got over there? You know what I got over there? Go over there. Go over there. Check it out. Yeah, it's a donut. Go ahead. It's for you. And maybe that approach is better. I in so many ways, am fascinated and love the fact that Bill Belichick is coaching on. It would be disappointing as a football fan to not watch what is going to happen with Bill Belichick without Tom Brady. The Brady story is fascinating, and it's getting all the headlines because I think most people feel like it's business as usual for the Patriots, and it is, except for what I feel is 51% of the overall strength of the team, the quarterback. When you have a great one, he's at least 51% of it. When you have Alex Smith, he might be 20, 25, 30% of the equation. But when you got Tom Brady, particularly in his prime, he's 51% of the equation, and that's left town. And is Bill Belichick now, the Belichick way. Are we going to find that Bill O'Brien and Matt Patricia try to wield their power with an iron fist and simply no one listens because they don't have the rings? And they don't have the backup of Tom Brady. 913-810-810. You're in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
His dream is to crush your dream. His contribution is to destroy your contribution.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the Program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us on a beautiful, we got sunshine where I'm at. I see some hazy clouds out there, but we've got sunshine, so I hope you're getting a little sunshine. Get out, get a little vitamin D, as a lot of us have been cooped up in the house. Beautiful day to get out and enjoy. Hope you can do it. We'll talk some baseball. Should have been opening day. That sucks. We'll talk to RJ Anderson from CBS Sports, their MLB writer, about that in a little bit. Just to finish off my thoughts on Belichick, and to be clear, greatest coach of all time, that still stands. But I think we're going to find out. I mean, to me, I think there will be a discussion. I always think it's amazing what Joe Gibbs was able to do. And I think it's been impressive. A lot of coaches have done impressive things. But if, you know, Andy Reid rattles off three more of the next five Super Bowls, and he's sitting with four championships and sits at 4-1 and is now rising up there. If for the jackasses that are gutless and call and yell at Jed and hang up, if that happens, then I would say that, hey, we've got a discussion to have here. I think it is important. So here's Bill Belichick's one-loss record here of late, 12 win totals, regular season. We know what he's done with the Super Bowls. 12, 11, 13, 14, 12, 12, 12, 12, 13, 14, 10. 11 when Brady wasn't there, 16, 12, 10, 14, 14, 9, 11, and then 2001 is when he took over. You tell me, what does he need to do over the next 4 or 5 years for us to say, yeah, it was Belichick?
He has to make the playoffs, and I think my first reaction would be he's got to get to a Super Bowl, but man, it's tough to get to a Super Bowl with a second quarterback. I don't think he has to get to a Super Bowl to prove it, but he has to be.
I don't either.
He has to be a winning coach over the next 4 or 5 years. He can't just go in the tank or muddle around at 7-9, 8-8, 9-7. He's got to be a 10-win guy consistently going forward.
And like Curtis said, and it's one of the things that go hand in hand, I was going to say that he needs to show that he can develop another quarterback. And it wasn't just Brady and him working symbiotically. It's the fact that he is a great X and O guy and really can scheme another guy to get him into the position where at least he's able to win 10 games.
I think he's got to win at least 50, doesn't he? In his next 5 years, in his last 5 years, he's won, 23, 36, 50, 62 games. So doesn't he need to average 10 wins per year? If we're going to be like, hey, it's Belichick is the guy. Doesn't mean, again, if he doesn't, he's still number one. He's still won six titles. But again, it's just to me like we're always, everything the Patriots do is right. Okay, well, when you're 6-3 in 19 years, 6-3 in the Super Bowl in 19 years, I mean, yeah, it's easy to do that. But I think we're gonna get a big window. I don't think he's got to go to the Super Bowl, but I think he's got to go to some playoffs. Three out of five, two out of five, average 10 wins. I don't think that's too high a bar to set. No. Now, the answer might be no. Bill Belichick's lost it, or the game has moved on from what his ways were. But his 25 years previous to that, his work in Cleveland and getting a bad Browns franchise to the playoffs, and then his defensive coordinator work, all that, yes, he's still by far number one with a bullet, but we will say that he's either no longer the best in the league, still the best of all time, but no longer the best in the league, or hey, you know what? Maybe more of it was Brady. And there is no hard and fast answer, just as people debate Michael Jordan versus LeBron James, and on each side of it, the fans are absolute that they are right.
If he wins 50 over the next 5 years, gets to a couple of conference championship games, and I think he'd be able to say that he was at least equal to the part, that maybe the combination of the two of them made him great, but he was good enough to be at least 50% of the equation. If he gets to a Super Bowl without Brady, then I think he can stand there and fly the bird and say, look at me, what do you think? And that sure. Brady may put him over the top. If he gets to a Super Bowl without Tom Brady, then I don't think he has to answer any questions for the rest of his life.
All right, news coming out. One other note before we go to the phones. I know Ted's waiting patiently, 913-3810-810. Dak Prescott's contract continues to be a discussion and is now a discussion again between the Cowboys and him, something that had not happened for quite a while. They're talking again, and the major holdup seems to be the Cowboys want him locked up for a long time. Dak Prescott just wants a shorter deal. He's wanting to ride the wave, surf the wave of what's going on with the collective bargaining agreement and how it's changing and how it's evolving. Right? That's what he wants to do. Make sure, okay, I'll sign for 3 years. But, man, if the cap's gone up huge, I want a chance to get back in there and get paid. This is more of an NBA-style contract, right? The Kevin Durant 2-3-year deal. I would advise it for quarterbacks only based upon the high injury rate of every other position out there. But I think it's something to keep your eye on. And if he gets it, and even if he doesn't, it's something to be aware of when it comes to Patrick Mahomes, because – if he's able to get this deal, and his is different in the sense that he's not locked up for that fifth year option year. He's into the, stage. He's 2 years down the road because he wasn't a first round pick. He doesn't have the fifth year option. So he's 2 years down the road from where Patrick Mahomes is. So I don't know that Mahomes could be talking about a 3 year deal, but Kirk Cousins seems to have set a trend and Dak Prescott seems to be following it. And when we talk about a 4 year extension onto the two that the Chiefs control, and so we're thinking about the 6 years, this being the first of 6 years that the Chiefs absolutely have him, if this becomes the new wave, that quarterbacks are wanting to be able to get back out on the market so they don't tumble from being number one to, wow, in my fourth year of the 6 years, I'm the eighth highest paid quarterback. That's something to keep in mind. And it's the quarterbacks getting more towards, listen, we ought to be getting like 25% of the cap every year, right? Or 20 or whatever number. And this is the way we make sure we do it. That's going to make it harder for the Chiefs to have a dynasty the way the Patriots did. I think the Dak Prescott contract continues, and Deshaun Watson's right behind him, continue to be contracts that we really have to keep an eye on as Chiefs fans and will influence how the Chiefs ultimately sign Patrick Mahomes. 913-3810-810. Let's go to the phones. Ted waiting patiently. You're in the program, Ted. What's up, buddy?
Hey, first thing I wanted to say is thank you guys so much for being here.
I appreciate that, man. You're a good man. Thank you.
It helps us all a lot. So.
Thank you.
I got a question about Chris Jones, but a comment I wanted to make about the Tom Brady and Belichick deal. You know, I heard the other day that five of Brady's six Super Bowl wins, they were tied or behind in the fourth quarter. And I know as Chiefs fans, if that ends up being Patrick Mahomes' record, and he wins six Super Bowls and five of them they're tied or behind, we're gonna say it's both Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but we're gonna lean that it's Patrick Mahomes.
Well, we got to taste Andy Reid without Patrick Mahomes, so we know how important the quarterback is. Andy Reid was no dunce with Alex Smith and just wised up and got better. He got a better quarterback. Andy Reid's always been there. Yeah, I agree. We're getting the test case for Belichick. Andy Reid's whole career till the last 2 years has been the test case that validates how good he is without a championship quarterback. And if Belichick wins two more Super Bowls with guys like Alex Smith, then we're going to know that Belichick is light years down the road from Andy, and Andy Reid wins no more or one more with Patrick Mahomes, we're going to know Belichick's light years down the road. But if Andy Reid checks off three more and had the kind of success he had, and Belichick starts looking like his days with the Browns, and he's out of the playoffs as much or more than he's in the playoffs, then there's a case to be made that Andy Reid's the superior coach.
Yeah. Now, on Chris Jones, you know, on that on the trade that San Francisco made,
yes.
What's the guy's name?
DeForest Buckner for the number 13, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So in regards to Chris Jones, the Chiefs are never going to get that kind of compensation for him because isn't it with Jones, it's going to be about the guaranteed money. And so anybody signing Jones is going to have to put more guaranteed money out front for him than what the Colts had to do for the other guy. So you're going to compensate. They're not going to be willing to give us up as much draft capital because they're going to have to guarantee more money on Jones than the other guy.
Well, theoretically, I mean, if you believe Jones is better, Pro Football Focus grades him better, then yes, Jones, and certainly now that a contract's already been set, Jones is going to want to top that. He's got a lot of reason to say he can, and yes, and I think that is going to be a deterrent. You've got to have the cap space. That's why we went over the teams with the cap space. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think if you're a Chiefs fan and you think that ultimately the Chiefs are going to have to trade Chris Jones or will trade Chris Jones, whether they have to or not, then you want Jadeveon Clowney to sign so that everybody else in need of defensive line help no longer can be negotiating with Jadeveon Clowney and recognizes, okay, the trade market is the only way to add a proven defensive lineman.
Yeah, I agree, and I just don't think we're going to get as much draft compensation.
I don't either. I don't either.
San Francisco did. Yeah. Okay,
I don't either. But and thanks, Ted, and I appreciate the call. But let's say this, if they get more, and more doesn't necessarily mean a higher first-round pick, we can go through the draft chart and say, hey, they can get three high seconds, or 2 seconds and a third, and that value will add up to more. So it's not just about a first-round pick. You can get more draft value without it being a first-round pick. And so we'll match it up on some charts and see what they get if they do indeed trade him. But, you know, I agree. I think it seems like there was this one hot deal, and so now I'm getting a little bit nervous. Where are the offers? So my aspirations, my hopes aren't as high. But if Brett Veach comes in and delivers a knockout deal, I'm going to be that much more impressed with Brett Veach. 913-3810-810. Marty, we'll squeeze you in here before we take a break. What's up, Marty? Marty! All right, Marty, I'm sorry, buddy. We'll try to catch you next time. 913-3810-810. We will take a break when we come back. RJ Anderson talking baseball. CBS's MLB writer joins us next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Thanks, Coach.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Happy opening day. That is not opening day, unfortunately, because of extreme circumstances, but we make the smart decision to try to save lives, and therefore we're not playing baseball. Sucks for all of us. We will get through it, and they will play again at some point. RJ Anderson from CBS Sports, MLB writer, brought to you by our great friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. RJ has gone ahead and figured out what opening day is going to be, or would have been, I should say, not to mention what the season could be with some of his great work at CBS Sports. He joins us right now on our Sprint guest line. RJ, thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
I love it. The opening day simulation, we don't really have anything to sweat, right? Royals got rained out.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about outside the park baseball. You know, there's a lot of real-life flourishes that you wouldn't necessarily expect, including, yes, a rainout on opening day.
And that's one of the things that, like, you know, true numbers guys get, and we talk about things like you can run simulations, but and simulations, it's why the over-under totals, you know, get crunched towards the middle. They know that extremes will happen. They know there will be 100-win teams. They know there will be 100-loss teams, but very rarely do the simulations, when you run them time and time again, it's supposed to crunch towards the normal. The reality is each season brings extremes, right? So the norm would be we all play, but there's always extremes. There's rainouts. And in a season, there are great teams and there are crappy teams that exceed what the average, what the normal simulation run time and time again would tell you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're basically talking about regression to the mean and, you know, the fallacy of small sample sizes and all that. And you have to be mindful of that in any given season, you know, whether it extends to a team-level performance or even an individual. So, you know, there used to be this great theory that basically any backup catcher, if they're giving enough seasons, eventually they'll hit 300. And the idea being, you know, backup catcher gets, what, 150 at-bats maybe? Maybe fewer if you're behind Salvador Perez, right? So, you know, over a small enough sample size, you know, weird things do happen. And I think the simulation kind of spelled that out because in our smallest sample size, we had the Miami Marlins going all the way to the NLCS. And, you know, I think everybody listening to this knows the Miami Marlins are projected to be one of the worst teams in baseball.
And so what do the simulations tell you we would get this year? Like what kind of variations? We went back and looked at what the variations were after we read your piece and said, okay, let's go back to the different game marks. You know, let's go back, you know, to just quarter up the season, 40 games, 80 games, where we are and how that would have changed the standings from what ultimately ended up being. And so that was interesting to see, you know, how it changes, you know, who ends up being the team and how it changes the wild cards. Not quite as much change as you might think, but at least enough to make it interesting. What did your projections say ultimately that you came up with on how the season was going to look?
Yeah, so basically, like you said, we cut it into four different scenarios based on, you know, these arbitrary numbers, you know, expected length of the season or what have you. We had 140-something games, 120-something, 100, and then 80, which, you know, that's basically two-plus months. So you're talking about a sprint rather than a marathon. But, you know, like I said, I think the wildest team-level result was the Miami Marlins winning National League East in our 84-game simulation and then going all the way to the NLCS. Otherwise, you know, like you said, there were a lot of results that made sense and that felt realistic. I guess the one thing that was prevalent throughout each simulation that kind of caught me off guard was the Chicago Cubs being really bad. And, you know, that's a team that has a lot of talent. I know they were disappointing last season, but it surprised me because when you actually dug in a little deeper and looked to see if the game had traded off Chris Bryant or, you know, moved some of the other core pieces there, it hadn't. So I'm not quite sure what led to that, but it is, you know, the one thing that seemed to stick out to me in every single scenario.
What is it about the Marlins? What's sneaky about them that they could get on a roll in that simulation and make themselves so much better than people expect them to be?
You know, that's a great question because when I looked underneath the hood, there wasn't anything that stood out. You know, they didn't have a bunch of really great and outstanding performances that deviated from what we would expect. It just seemed like an instance where they didn't have any huge black holes. And, you know, we've seen teams in real life follow that blueprint. You know, the Baltimore Orioles, back when they were good, you know, they didn't necessarily stand out on paper. But because they were decent across the board, they were able to avoid, you know, fielding replacement-level players or having to really, you know, hide or risk overexposure of certain players. So, you know, that's a legitimate team-building exercise. Now, I'm not saying the Miami Marlins in real life are actually going to be like that, but I'm saying that's what the results in the game are like, is this, they were decent across the board, even if they weren't necessarily outstanding in any individual aspect.
By the way, the Marlins over-under total, 64.5, right? That's on a 162-game season. The Cubs over-under total, 86 for them. In fact, that's the highest tied with the Cardinals in the NL Central. So they're co-favorites according to Vegas's over-unders. Now, we always say this is not a, the over-under number is not a prediction. It's based upon the number that they think the general public will put half the money on each side. So important to keep that in mind if you're not, if you're a novice to gambling. They don't also come up with a projection that, like, their models have the Cubs winning 95 and put the number at 63, right? It's going to be somewhere near where they think they have them going. What's wrong with the Cubs?
You know, that's a great question. I don't really have a good answer. Like I said earlier, based on the results that we're getting from the Cubs, including them tying for the worst record in one of these simulations, you would expect that they would have traded Chris Bryant and maybe some of their other core pieces the way they were supposedly open to doing this winter. None of that really happened. You know, there were a few trades where they were selling off pieces at the deadline within these seasons, but I don't really have a good explanation for you. I guess maybe the combination of, you know, the aging curve, maybe some of the assumptions the game made about playing time contributed to that. You know, for instance, Tyler Chatwood was getting a lot of innings, and if you know anything about Tyler Chatwood, you know he is prone to leading the league or being one of the league leaders, at least, in walks. And I believe that he actually did lead the league in walks in a few of these simulations. And, you know, that can contribute if you have a guy going out there every fifth day and, you know, walking the batting tee and whatnot. So, you know, I don't think there's necessarily some real-world implications to take from that. It's just one of those weird ticks that the game and its projection system has.
Most people would say here in Kansas City that, boy, you got the Royals right. 49-71 in a 120-game season, 408 win percentage, 20 back of the division-winning Cleveland Indians. By the way, Indians, White Sox, Twins, below 500 at 58-62. Then the Royals and then the Tigers bringing up the rear at 42-78, tied with the Orioles for the worst record in the American League. This scenario had the Marlins at 40-80. Down at the bottom, which is more where people would have them. That's the worst record in baseball. Anything you took away looking at the Royals or that we should take away from the simulations whenever the Royals do get the season started?
Yeah, I mean, they really like Mondesi, and I think that's common sense, right? You know, he's coming off a little bit of a disappointing year based on his breakout the season before last, but he's super talented. You know, he's still on the young side, and I think there's a lot of reason for optimism about him getting back to being a high-quality player. And you know, beyond that, Hunter Dozier's there. And, you know, I mean, you know, they have some young pitching on the way, and we've seen teams in the past graduate some of that young pitching, and if they hit the ground running, well, all of a sudden, you know, it kind of changes the team's fortunes. So, you know, the simulations didn't necessarily promote those guys to the majors like the real-life world might. They played it kind of safe. But, you know, those are kind of the things to look for with the real-world Royals and also the simulated Royals.
You talked about Mondesi. Buster only had a list this past offseason of 15, 16, 17 shortstops. I can't remember. He was talking about the top shortstops in baseball and maybe it was even the top young shortstops. Mondesi was not on that list. You would put in there the lack of frequency of contact doesn't scare you as much as it seemed to scare Buster only?
I think there's, you know, certainly an argument to be made that, you know, he might not be a star-level player because of the lack of contact and also, you know, the on-base percentage. But at the same time, he's a guy who obviously has, you know, a well-rounded game in terms of providing value on the base pass and defensively. So that gives him a high floor. And I think that, you know, there's a chance that his bat is going to settle in somewhere in between the last two seasons. And if he does that, say he's, you know, got a 90 OPS plus or 95 OPS plus, somewhere in that range, he's going to be a very valuable player. Now, at the same time, you know, his durability does give me some pause. And I'm not, again, saying he's going to be an MVP caliber player or anything like that. But I do think that his secondary skills give him a wide berth at the plate.
No doubt. Do you believe, is there any chance, like what's your view of their starting pitching? How much optimism should be left for guys like Brad Keller, maybe more so Jacob Junis, who's several years older than Brad Keller. Keller's still pretty young. Danny Duffy putting together a full healthy season. He was having a good spring. Spring numbers, any fantasy nerd can tell you, don't matter really where the hill of beans. But I'd rather see a guy throw well than not throw well. Is there any optimism that their pitching staff could be better than you know, I think most people would give it credit for right now?
I mean, maybe, but, you know, Brad Keller is not really my type, and I think if Danny Duffy pitches well, he might find himself traded, especially if they're willing to eat some money. You know, Jorge Lopez has always been interesting to me, and I don't know if he was necessarily going to crack that rotation, but, you know, I think he might have value in a relief role if he ends up there. And you know, ultimately, this is a Royals rotation still waiting for that youth infusion that I just mentioned a little bit ago. So the good news is, even if you're not high on this current starting five or whatever it ends up looking like, you know, they have help on the way, and that rotation should be improving over the next year or two no matter what.
In the simulation, you had trades. One of the trades you had coming through was Ian Kennedy. Do you believe Ian Kennedy will have trade value? You had him eating cash. That would be new for the Royals. They never ate cash under the previous owner and under this general manager. The general manager is the same. The owner is different. David Glass was a renowned frugal owner early on. Now, he did spend all the way up to the 11th highest payroll in baseball during their 13-17 run. He opened the purse strings, and I have no qualms with the amount of money that the Glass family spent on the payroll, but they would never eat money in deals, and that seemed to handcuff them. You know, first of all, your opinion, eating money in deals, how vital is, how much of an important weapon or tool is that for an owner to give Dayton Moore or any general manager when it comes to making trades?
Yeah, I think that's a very important piece of the puzzle. I mean, you're talking about an era right now where so many teams are being ran as if there is a legitimate salary cap in place due to that luxury tax line. And I think that, you know, if your owner is willing to sign off on eating, say, $5 million or $10 million or whatever the number is, I know those are large amounts, but, you know, if your owner is willing to sign off on that, you're likely to sweeten the pot enough to get a better package in return. And, you know, we just saw with the Mookie Betts trade, I mean, you know, Mookie Betts is almost unanimously considered the number two player in baseball. The Red Sox tacked on David Price and $45 million in order to sweeten the pot there. So that shows you how much money and how much avoiding that luxury tax line or working around that can matter. So, you know, from a Royals perspective, I really thought that they could have moved Ian Kennedy last July if they were willing to eat some of that contract. They had their reasons for not doing that. I'm not quite sure if I understand them, but from my perspective, yes, I do value that in an owner, and I do think that is an important piece of the puzzle nowadays, even more so than it was, say, a decade ago or 15 years ago.
Several years ago, Danny Duffy was having his best year. That precipitated the contract that he ultimately signed. If he's having that kind of year again this year, if the hot start is him finally being healthy, I know his arm was barking at him in spring training to begin with last year. But if he's healthy, he told me, he was in the program last week, he said he's feeling as well as he's felt. Now, listen, I think guys say this all the time, but if we're to take him at his word, feeling better than he's felt in a long time. If he's the Danny Duffy that had that kind of breakout year, what kind of value is that on the open market?
On the open market or on the trade market?
Trade market. I'm sorry, thank you.
Oh, okay. I think he has, what, 2 years, 30 something million left. So, you know, it's not a trifling amount in today's environment, but it is certainly an amount that I think a pitcher of his caliber is worth. It goes back to what I kind of just said about Ian Kennedy and the environment around the league right now, and that is that teams really do not like paying money for players, especially non-elite players. So, you know, Danny Duffy at his best is, what, a mid-rotation starter, maybe a bit better during some of these years. And unfortunately, I think that the Royals might have to eat a little bit of that money because of the risk associated with him. You know, he's not, unfortunately, the most durable guy, but he should have value. He, you know, on performance level, he definitely has value to a team. So it wouldn't surprise me if there would be a market for him if he gets off to a good start. It's just a matter of whether the finances can work and, you know, maybe a team out there who's competing and who really wants him and values having that extra year of service would be willing to give up something decent for him. But I do think if the Royals want to get the best possible return, they are going to have to eat some of that $30 million or whatever it is by the time they trade him.
All right, RJ, what do you think baseball should be doing to shift gears here a little bit? What should their plan be? They can't go back. It's not on them to decide when to go back. They've got to get the clearance from all the governors and local government officials that are dictating when you can gather. So they can't even really begin to formulate a plan until they get a date on when that's going to happen. But when they do, are you in favor? You wrote about this a little bit, the seven-inning doubleheaders and things like that. Do you think we're going to actually see that?
You know, I don't know if we'll see the seven-inning doubleheaders. I do think we're going to see a lot of doubleheaders, just the fat in the schedule without necessarily extending the length of the schedule in terms of actual days played. I think we're going to see, you know, obviously fewer than 162 games played, and it wouldn't surprise me if they even agreed to neutral site playoff games just in order to get those in and give themselves about an extra month of time. Now,
you know, Scott Boras had an interesting proposal about playing the World Series all the way to Christmas. I don't think that's going to happen, and not just because baseball never takes his ideas seriously, it seems, but I do think we are going to see some of these creative solutions, and it wouldn't necessarily surprise me if we do go to a seven-inning doubleheader schedule, and it doesn't surprise me if, they play with expanded rosters, at least for the first month or so, because you think about it, pitchers usually work backward from opening day. Right now, they don't know when opening day is going to be, and you don't want to risk injury. You don't want to risk, entering next season with a bunch of guys who are going to blow out because they barely had an off season, and, they had an unusual workload based not only on innings, but also, days of rest this season. So I think they're going to have to get creative with those potential issues in mind, but I don't know how many of those we're actually going to see.
Are we going to see expanded playoffs?
I don't know if that'll be on the table for this year, but it would make sense, right? This is basically a free pass to get experimental, to get, kind of funky with the postseason. And if they wanted to do something where they expand and, run that proposal that was on the table, then I think a lot of fans would be open to that. And I'm sure owners would be, because it would make them more money than they would otherwise.
That's one of the things I think will be interesting to see. I one of the things I've said, listen, I think the NBA is going to do it too. I think they're going to come back, play some games, finish the season, get a playoffs of some sort, whether it's a 16-team, single elimination tournament or a full variety of series out there. Whatever they do, they're going to finish it. And then they're going to start late, because they've long been talking about moving their schedule back. At least for several years they've been talking about it, moving it back to like a December start and running through August.
Yeah.
I said this is a time for every league, if they've had something that they wanted to try, but they are like, listen, there's just too much money at stake to do it, this is a free roll. Now is the time. Yeah. Baseball's talking about going to a sixth playoff team. Why not this time? Why not give it a go? You got the pretense, you got an obvious get-out-of-jail-free card, by saying, listen, we didn't get to have the full season, so we want to make sure every team that might have been able to make a run, or at least the strongest ones of the bunch, we add some teams in and give them a shot in the postseason. Plus, frankly, we need to make up some of the lost checks. And playoff games bring revenue, so we're going to give it a go. And if they're even thinking that six is going to get them eight eventually, why not try that and see what happens? And if it's a smashing success, then great. You flip the switch and you go do it in the future. If it's a dismal failure, you say, hey, COVID-19, we did what we had to do. It's a one-time thing. Everybody calm down. You've got an opportunity to try literally almost anything you want. And so why not throw it out there right now, at least anything you want around the schedule and the postseason?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Like you said, people are going to be open to it this year. And if not, you just say, hey, it was a weird year, and we'll go back to normal now.
Yeah, that's, I hope it happens. All right, we're talking to R.J. Anderson from CBS Sports. Final Four time. My Final Four brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. Ortho Urgent Care, they've got it. It's open 7 days a week now with a Save Your Spot feature. Do your waiting in line online. Learn more by visiting kcoi.com or by calling 913-319-7633. I will start you with this. Just tell me the first thing that pops into your mind. Are you personally for or against the sixth playoff team?
I'm against, I think.
Okay. What are you binge-watching right now to take up the place of sports? Anything, any show, anything that's taking up your time? We're trying to get good ideas for people to go out there, so we're finding out what other people are enjoying.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I just completed The Circle on Netflix. So if you're into trashy reality TV, there you go.
The Circle. I've never even heard of it. Trashy. I got a vibe on what it is, though. Trashy reality TV. All right. When we are back to normal, the MLB season should be how many games?
Oh, man. Should be or will be?
Should be.
I'm guessing like 80.
No, not this year. When we get a normal year.
Oh.
Like what should, what do you think the right amount of games to be playing a full major league season? A lot of people think 162 is too many.
I'm conditioned to say 162, but I understand the argument for fewer.
Okay. All right. Very good. And then finally, your World Series pick is who over who?
I was going to pick the Dodgers over the Yankees, so I'm going to stick with that. And, the Yankees might be at full force when we get back to it, so who knows?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's giving them a chance, giving a number of people a chance to get out the Verlander. Of course, Stanton and Judge for the Yankees, yeah, they might be even more lethal. And the time they would have had to lag behind and have to make up, they're not going to have to deal with. So they could be even more dangerous. Although they did lose Severino to the Tommy John. Yeah. RJ, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work. We'll talk to you down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and stay safe, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. You too, my friend. Stay healthy. The best to you and your family. RJ Anderson from CBS Sports joining us. Royals not looking good, but you see the simulations. It's kind of interesting to see the Marlins. You know, sometimes they're dead last. Another time they win the division. They win the division in a mediocre division. I will say this, you know, had there been six playoff teams, the Royals in their playoff run would have made it in 13 and would have made it again in 17. And I think 17 would have been a team that people would not want to have seen, a team with experience that knew it was their last hurrah. That would be a pretty motivated team. You'd think everybody's motivated in the playoffs. But I would love to have seen the Royals group get one more shot at it, and six playoff teams would do it. I'm very much in favor of the six playoff teams. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll stump the chumps. You want Cajun food? Come and get it. Grab a line, 913-3810-810.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, who played the most NBA seasons without missing the playoffs? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.